It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well.
Glad to have you. In fact, Kyle is actually working on assignment now, so he's working right now. And we want to let everybody know he's a part of the podcast. Sometimes we can all be together, and then like the previous podcast, I couldn't be on all of the shows. So there's times when we can be together and sometimes not. So I want to let everybody know that there's no conspiracy. Kyle is still a major part of the podcast, and I want to make that very clear. A lot of stuff going on, very upset. Obviously, as a basketball fan, I was wrong. I admit that I was wrong. I thought we were going to get Cuddy Psy, but it didn't work out, did it, Bubba?
No, unfortunately, Kadeem Fee decided to go to Ole Miss, and that is kind of, I mean, a lot of people were unsure, but then there were a few that I saw that kind of thought he was headed to Oxford, and that did end up being the case. But along those lines, with recruiting, as soon as Kadeem Fee committed, probably within an hour of that, according to Stephen Igo, I saw this earlier this morning, Charles Coleman, who's a seven-footer, is from Massachusetts, a guy that we have been on very heavily, and Coach Chilius has recruited him for right at 2 years now. But he seems to be second-guessing his decision to be a Demon Deacon. And, of course, Danny Manning hasn't had a whole lot of success there in recent years. So with that being the case, maybe Charles Coleman wants to be a Pirate. And then another guy that we're really looking at is Javon Franklin. He's a 6'7". 215-pound JUCO forward, and he seems like he's down between the Pirates and then also West Virginia. So if Bobby Huggins is looking at bringing him in, you know he's a talent.
No doubt about it. I just want to say to fans what I'm excited about. Look how far this program has come under Dooley in 1 year. You can't look at – I had a coworker, and I was joking with him. He said, man, Dooley needs to be fired. I said, what are you talking about? He said the wins are just not there, and I explained to him that it's like basically like the cards you're dealt and what you inherit, right? And Dooley never backed down from that. He always was that. And he said, and I told him that the very fact that they were with Dooley, they're rebuilding this program, and it's going to take time. And I said, in 2 or 3 years, don't be asking me for basketball tickets to take your son when we're really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we live in the instant gratification society. Nobody wants the work that, or nobody has the patience for the work to be put in to get the desired results. And they all want it right now. So I think if you really look at things, I mean, look at this class that Dooley, Rocafort, Chilius, et cetera, have assembled with really nothing to recruit on other than the relationships they have in the past and what can be for East Carolina basketball. They don't have any success to sell yet. So if we're in on guys like Kadeem Fee, who's down between us and Ole Miss and Pitt, and also had very serious consideration, and not only consideration, but offers from programs like Auburn and Texas Tech, who were in the Final Four this year, I mean, we're on the right track. I mean, you're not going to win all the recruiting battles. And if you're not in those recruiting battles and getting rejected some, that's not a good thing. Right, you're going to get rejected some, and being able to just win a few of them, that's all you need, especially in basketball. And you just find a way to win a couple of those, two or three key pieces, and all of a sudden you're sitting in a very good situation.
Yeah, it is, and I think that you look at the fact we're going to be a really good program, but you got to give it time. I think that I told folks that I was hoping that we could piece together some more wins, but because of the Sean Williams, that suspension, and early in the season, that hurt us and some different things. But I think you look at 2 or 3 years, definitely 2 years, and we'll be, I think, at least the middle of the pack of the American, don't you?
Yeah, you have nice pieces with Sean Williams and also, obviously, Jaden Gardner. What he did as a freshman, particularly without the presence of an outside game where people could just collapse on him, an inexperienced freshman in the post, and then he still did what he did, was just remarkable. So hopefully Seth Ledé, hopefully he can come back from that injury, the ACL injury. he suffered late in the season against Wichita State. And I really like these guys that we have coming in. We're going to catch up with Steven Igo, as well as ECU basketball color analyst Cy Seymour and basketball letter winner Neil Punn in the coming days to talk about these guys a little more in detail and more specifically to what they bring to the table for the 2019-2020 season.
No doubt about it, and we're going to actually have them on, and we'll have a clearer picture in the next day or two. And this is the most excited I've been about Pirate basketball as far as recruiting ever. As you know, I'm a huge basketball fan, so I suffered many, many years with this program, but I'm hoping that with Dooley, like I said, in the next two or three years, that's what I'm looking at is for me to be a fair to Dooley in this program. I think you got to give them at least it's a four-year project, I believe. So we'll take a look at that. Hey, by the way, Bubba, I failed to mention this before we started recording. I got at my information today on the regionals and super regionals for tickets. And I think the deadline was May the 28th for regionals, and it's a hard deadline to buy tickets, and it was like June the 4th for super regionals. So I'm sure you can go to ecupirates.com and certainly 1-800-DIAL-ECU. You better go ahead and get your tickets. It's going to be a really hard ticket to get.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. My dad and I are season ticket holders for baseball, as you are. And I know last year the regional, of course, sold out. And I'm really looking forward to hosting another regional in Greenville, because as we've hosted, I guess this would be the fifth time, but only the third time at Clark LeClair Stadium, because obviously we hosted in 2001 in Wilson and 2004 in Kinston, and then, of course, 2009 and then 2016 at Clark LeClair. 2018 at Clark LeClair. Right. But with that being said, I really think this year that we may be in a position to host that super regional as well, and I can only imagine what that ballpark's going to be like, because you got a taste of it last year. I tell you, when Connor Litton hit that home run in our opening game against UNC Wilmington, that was just it was like a perfect script, and that ballpark was electric and just gave you goosebumps, as Coach Godwin always says.
Yeah, it really was, and I think this year they built on we see this team with 2016, and they summed their total a little bit in 2017, but you got to look at 2018, where we were, and I think 2019 is going to be a really special year. And I've said all along, I think this team is a super regional team, and who knows what happens after that, but you have to get there, and it could take a bad bounce like we had with the weather last year. I mean, Agnos, and it will always haunt me, that rain delay was probably the longest rain delay in the history of my baseball watching and being a fan, a career, like 7 hours or whatever it was, and have him pitch lights out and you're up big. And then to have that was very unfortunate. But anyway, I know, Bubba, we've got a great guest. I know that with Memphis, they're coming to town, and we wanted to have the coach of Memphis, right?
Yeah, we earlier today had the opportunity on Tuesday morning to catch up with Darren Schoenrock. He is the 15th year head coach of the Memphis Tigers. And now let's go to that interview with Darren Schoenrock.
Pirates have a big series this weekend. It's hard to believe the season finale, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Dave, of course, tonight the Pirates will be playing their final midweek game of the season against Campbell. And then this weekend, Memphis Tigers coming to town. And with that being the case, we're very excited now to be joined by the 15th year head coach of the Tigers, Darren Schoenrock. Coach, welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be with you.
Absolutely, Coach. We wanted to have you. Certainly, first thing that came to mind when I was looking at your resume this morning was the fact that in the coaching world, man, 15 years in this day and age is a long time.
Well, 15 at one spot, and I guess at Memphis, you can play on Survivor. You know, we've had some ups and downs through the years. We've kept the thing flowing. I feel like the program is in better shape than it was 15 years ago. We've elevated some things, and you know, we're still don't have access to quite all the things that all the American Athletic teams do, but that's okay. I mean, our kids don't know that. We just roll and play and try to attack this thing from from a blue-collar standpoint, and I really like our team this year. Great, great young men to be around, and a lot of fun to coach this group.
Coach, one of the questions I had before we get started with the matchup this weekend is we're trying to get your people's feelings in baseball, and specifically, easy for me to say, for college baseball, with the NCAA ruling with not the third assistant or to have the opportunity, I just want to get your take as someone that's in the coaching profession. How did you feel about that decision?
Well, I've seen all the realm. You know, this is my 35th year of coaching college baseball, 35th year in a college dugout. So I've seen the realm of scholarships, this, that, the vault. We had, once upon a time, we had the restricted earnings coach. I've seen all the, and just it's a travesty. I mean, it is absolutely, it's mind-boggling some of the leagues that voted against it and you know, and monies that they're spending in other areas. I don't get it. I don't understand. There has to be some explanation. Maybe we have to circle the wagons back around and reword some things. You know, watching what my volunteer coach, you know, what they have to do on a daily basis to even, you know, make $400 of rent a month. It's unbelievable. And I'm seeing what happens in some other sports, you know, and I haven't spent 5 years working for Ron Polk at two stops, University of Georgia and Mississippi State, before coming to Memphis. I was on, he kept us very educated when he was a head coach of NCAA things that affect college baseball. And I don't know if you guys were around and knew how much he fought or verbally fought, you know, before Twitter, fought the NCAA. This is something definitely that he would have jumped on board with, you know, had he still been a head coach and had a voice. He's a volunteer assistant now, and it's kind of, he's winding down, but, you know, we've got to continue to fight the young coaches. And I say young coaches, and I include Cliff with how successful Cliff has been at ECU. Obviously he's in a national spotlight as one of the tremendous coaches in our league that can kind of carry the torch for our league. And mainly because of how successful ECU's been on the baseball field, and boy, we got to address the coaches per player, and there's no entry level to get in this in our profession. If somebody graduates from college and they say, "I want to be a Division I baseball coach," it's hard to really give them the route to go, because you go, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this, you make this move, you go to junior college. Then you go to Division I, you become a volunteer, you tell your wife she's going to have to work. It's just different. But the young coaching body, you know, I haven't spent all that time with Coach Polk. He always would encourage the younger coaches to be vocal in what our sport needs. I hope we can circle back with this item and maybe word things differently or educate administrators a little bit more to see what a glaring need this is for our profession.
Well, hopefully they can get it done. I know we've got to wait a couple years on that, and I hope that
we do.
Maybe the fans, college baseball fans, are tremendous, and as Larry the Cable Guy would say, get her done. I think it's a no-brainer.
Get her done. That's right. That's right.
Do it. So go ahead, Bubba. Oh, I guess he's not there. Coach, I wanted to ask you, as far as the matchup this weekend, can you tell us who's going to be your, I would normally say Friday night guy, but your, in this case, Thursday night guy?
Well, you know, it's a little different scenario for the Tigers. I mean, a couple of things. What you see this time of year is you see some rotation guys starting to get a little bit fatigued. You know, one of the things we've done this year that hasn't happened too many years, it's been pretty much the same three guys in the weekend rotation the whole year. I mean, from about week three on, you know, we all experiment a little bit early and try to figure things out, but for at least the whole conference season, it's been the same three guys. You're seeing some mileage on them. Your stuff, you know, this time of year the pitching gets a little bit tired, the hitters kind of get a little bit of an advantage. We know going in the tournament, having qualified for the tournament for sure now, that we've got to go win that thing. We're not going to be an at-large team. I mean, I say that unless we you know, unless we win three, win tonight, win three this weekend, and win four in the tournament, and lose in a championship game, there may be enough elevation in RPI to be an at-large. I mean, realistically, we have to win the tournament. So going into the tournament, we have to be as strong as we can on the mound and get the right guys in the right slots as that tournament unfolds. So we're going to go, and Danny Dins is going to be our Thursday night guy. He's been a guy that was a little bit in the rotation for a little bit, has kind of bounced back and forth from a weekend to a midweek guy early in the season. And then since conference play started, has been pretty much our midweek guy. Very, very capable, good stuff. Left-hander that'll go in the low 90s, 90 to 93, and has capabilities. He's still trying to figure things out. You know, not as confident as you see some weekend guys. Alex Hicks has been either our Saturday or Sunday guy the whole year. He'll go day two of the series in a very limited pitch count situation. And then day three, we'll go Hunter Smith, who's been our Friday guy, because we will not throw him game one of the tournament. So we've kind of flipping things around a little bit than what they've been past few weekends. So interesting, you know, we're playing a team that really they're just obviously outstanding in all three phases of the game. They can beat you a lot of ways. They're the one team that has, in our league, that has a chance to be a national seed, has a chance to be a host. And after this weekend, you know, our league has to kind of secretly and silently root for the Pirates to you know, to carry the torch and the banner for our league. And Cliff's done a tremendous job, you know, putting this team in a position to do that. And this league race, it's been kind of the Pirates and then everybody else kind of the same. They clearly have, you know, kind of stepped out in front of us this year, which hasn't happened every year the American. It's been a little tighter race some years than it has been this year.
Yeah, Coach, I want to also talk about your, as far as the hitting is concerned. I know there's a young kid, a freshman, is it Hunter Goodman?
Hunter Goodman, yes.
That's really good for you?
Yeah, he's really put together a nice year. We knew coming in he'd be very capable. You never really know what you're going to get out of a freshman. But he certainly has succeeded all expectations. Pretty highly recruited kid, local Arlington, which is a suburb of Memphis here, on the outskirts of town. So we've known about Hunter since he was, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Wow.
I actually got a picture. His mom, I spoke at their called the Arlington Tigers Youth Baseball Banquet one year, and Hunter was about 8 years old, and he got his picture made with me after the banquet. And little did I know, you know, 11 years later, he, as an 18-year-old, he'd be hitting in the 3-hole for us. So,
well,
you never know. It's pretty cool. Just loves being in the batter's box, and that's the best way I can describe Hunter. It's everything in our dugout kind of stops when he comes up there, and it's one of those guys. And he's had enough help around him. Enough. We've kind of rotated guys that hit in front of him and behind him, based on who's hot and who's going well. That's really important for when a guy puts together a year with that many RBIs and that kind of numbers. Is you've got to rely on some guys behind you that if they do pitch around you, that they're going to get the job done. And luckily we've had guys to do that to help Hunter out.
It's going to be really interesting, especially with you guys. And I know with you were talking about the conference. How do you feel about the conference overall, baseball-wise? I think that there's some people that have been criticizing the Pirates about the league, but I think the league itself is a very good baseball league.
Oh, it's really good. I mean, you know, 3 years ago we were a 5-bid league, so 5 of the 9. Before we even had 9, that's 5 of the 8. We're in regionals, and go around anywhere around the country and see if over half their leagues in regionals. And there's only going to be 2 leagues that happens in, and that's probably the ACC and the SEC. Where over half are in regional play. So we've been one of the leagues that's done that. East Carolina has been, you know, Cliffy's had them in the upper echelon of this league in his entire tenure there. They had the one year that it was a little bit tough. They stumped the toe a little bit, but this race this year is a little bit unique in that they've created so much separation between themselves and the rest of the league, that doesn't really take away from the rest. The rest of the league, we're all playing very competitive weekends. I mean, it's the series is decided on one or two pitches, you know, each weekend. And what Cliff has done is they've been so consistent on the defensive side, you know, pitching and defense, which wins championships. And then they do a phenomenal job at just understanding and teaching their lineup guys on who they need to be to make the offense click. You know, some guys need to be table setters, some need to be run producers. Some, you know, you have instigators, setters, and producers, and executioners, and those guys. And plus, teams always seem to know who those guys should. You know, those kids know who they should be. So I'm looking forward to it. I love the environment that's been created over there through the years and the history and the tradition. I'm anxious for our guys that have never gotten to play over there to play there and see it. And you know, having spent 7 years in the SEC and where you have a lot of big programs in smaller communities, that's kind of what you have in East Carolina. You know, the rest of our league are big universities in big cities. So you don't have the you know, the family environment from a crowd standpoint. That's one thing you get at ECU. You get there, which you get kind of around the SEC in, as far as crowd and experience and playing experience for our guys. I'm anxious for them to experience that.
Coach, I have a question. Just one of the things that really jumped off the page on taking a look at your personnel was the contributions that freshman Hunter Goodman has made. You take a look at Hunter. He's a guy, from right there in the greater Memphis area, about 30 mm-hmm. miles or so away in Arlington. He's a guy, he's batting right at 350, double figures and home runs and doubles, and has driven in over 60 runs while slugging nearly 600. And he also tops the team in stolen bases, so he seems like the guy that can really do it all.
He loves playing baseball. That's what he does. And we're playing him in left field now, and you know, he's an adequate outfielder. He's played a lot of outfield in high school. He's a catcher by trade. He'll go behind the plate next year quite a bit for us. We got a senior catcher that kind of runs our whole show. He calls the game. You know, we don't call the game from the dugout. He calls the game, and he just has taken so much ownership in the pitcher. But Hunter has very, very good defensive skills as a catcher too. So he's kind of the whole package. It's been really neat to see. I mean, not a quiet kid, doesn't. You know, just has fun playing the game and just has a hunger to get in that batter's box and it's been that way since he was youngster. And then we got another really interesting dynamic is our senior center fielder Colton Neal, who hits in the two hole, is also emerged as our closer, which we kind of anticipated this would happen. That's been a neat story. You know, Colton's got 9 saves on the year and a ERA under 1.52. He's got 24 strikeouts in 17 innings, and the opponents are hitting under 200 against him. But he's also an integral part of what Hunter Goodman does, because he's hitting in that two hole, and he knows his on base percentage is a critical factor in Hunter's year. So it's fun to coach a dual guy. You know, we've always wanted to have him in college baseball, and we've got one this year that's a true dual guy. It's very unique.
Coach, I wanted to ask before we let you go, I know you've been generous with your time, especially being a game tonight. Can you talk about this special event you've got going on?
Yeah, it's the Babe Howard Classic. Babe was Babe passed a few years back, but he was a guy that did a lot for youth baseball locally. And I say youth baseball, mostly the American Legion A. In the old days of American Legion baseball, he had a team called Millington Telephone, which was the team to play on around here. The city of Millington's about 40 miles to the north of Memphis. And he built a facility there that was used throughout the late 80s and all the way through the 90s. The mid-80s through the mid-90s when the Olympics were – when baseball was an Olympic sport, a true Olympic sport, and being played in Olympics, the Olympic teams would go to Millington and train. So Cuba and Japan and Korea and all those teams end up playing in this facility against the USA team. Babe funded that facility. That facility is now the the home field for the junior college locally, which is called Southwest Tennessee Community College. Ironically, my son is the head coach at Southwest, but we play one game in that stadium a year, so the Tiger fans in Millington can come out and see us. We play one game up here to honor. There's a big Navy base in Millington, and we call it our Military Appreciation Night. We reach out to the military base, the Navy base there, which is the largest land inland Navy base in the world. And,
oh, wow.
So we kind of combine honoring Babe Howard and reaching out and making this a military appreciation night, a lot of fanfare. And it's just so happened that it's been UT Martin the past 3 or 4 years. We always play them late in the year, midweek games. So, but it's good. It's fun for our guys to get up and see the facility. And our guys that grew up locally have played there because they do a lot of tournaments in that facility. But the out-of-town kids gives them a chance to see where a lot of big leaguers, a lot of major leaguers played on that field when they were training with the USA team. So a lot of history involved in that.
Yeah, Coach, I know that certainly that's a great thing you got going on tonight. Good luck tonight, of course, and good luck against the Pirates this weekend and then the conference tournament next weekend,
yeah.
Clearwater and beyond.
Unbelievable, yeah. Well, thanks for having me, and we look forward to playing again tonight, of course. We look forward to getting over there and going squaring off with the Pirates and having a fun weekend.
Thank you very much, Coach, as we actually are having a great time with Campbell and then Memphis this weekend with Thursday. I got to keep saying Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I even told him before we recorded earlier today, Bubba, that I was keep saying Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm so used to that format, and it's actually a day early with Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yep, it takes a little getting used to. It seems weird to be playing a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, but that is the deal this weekend, and that's typically very standard the week prior to the conference tournament starting.
Let's talk. I know we're going to have a chance to now go to a great friend of ours. The very first guest we've ever had on this podcast was Stephen Igo, Hoist of Colors. Lots of stuff to talk about. And let's go to Stephen right now.
Well, it's that time of year. A lot of stuff going on with football and certainly with definitely basketball recruiting. Very excited about that. And the baseball team is still kicking booty with us right now from HoistTheColors.net, HTC. It would be Stephen Igo. What's up, dude?
Hey, guys. What's up? Glad to rejoin the podcast. As always, we talk some Pirates athletics. Lots of stuff going on, even with it being mid-May.
It really is. I know you never sleep, but this must be a tough week for you and a tough day. I appreciate you coming on and spending the time with us in a visit because I know today's the day for the last day for the signing period for basketball, right?
Yeah. Today's the technical last day for the signing period, but the way it's been explained to me by sources in the industry now is guys will wait past today and then just sign grant and aid. So even though it's the official last day to sign a letter of intent for the spring period, it's really not like some sort of massive deadline like with football where everybody signs on that one day. So it kind of makes for a frustrating a few weeks if you're a basketball coach, because really you have this giant open period and you can't really force kids into signing in a certain time frame. So that I'm sure gets on a lot of coaches' nerves, but that is basketball recruiting these days and is part of what adds to the drama and makes it so interesting.
Stephen, before we really dive into the big three, it's been a while since we've had you on. You obviously work very closely with many of the folks inside ECU Athletics, particularly Tom McClellan and the media relations staff, but also some others on a fairly regular basis. So over the last 5+ months, can you, from your perspective, describe the positive energy that's present and the culture shift that's taking place?
Oh, yeah, it's night and day. I mean, it's so night and day, it's almost hard to put into words. When I go to sporting events now, the way we are received by the administration, particularly Ryan Robinson and John Gilbert, is unparalleled. I mean, these guys reach out to us. They know how important I think the media is as far as an outlet to the fans. So I've already, talked to Ryan Robinson and John Gilbert and some of the other administrators, over off-the-record conversations, whether it be lunch or just hanging out at a game, in a couple months more so than I did in the 5 years of the Jeff Comper era. And it's just refreshing to for them to be so forward, and I think they get it. They understand it's not going to happen overnight, but the overall energy and forward direction and momentum is at an all-time high, especially compared to the last few years, and I'm very excited to see where this thing ends up.
You know, Stephen, really, you and I know you cover it every single day. There's every time I can get out there, I can. But you're right. I remember when we were in the, I guess it was kind of like a briefing, if you will, before we went on the do's and don'ts of what he cannot do for the Town Bank Tower. And I remember Ryan Robinson vividly talking about being transparent and transparency. And when you said the word refreshing, that's spot on, because right when I was coming into things last year, invited out to practice, it was just like a gloom and doom atmosphere. And I know that we all are supposed to be professionals, but when you've graduated from East Carolina and or you're an East Carolina fan covering the team, it's really hard when not only you're not winning, you expect ebbs and flows, but the administration being so secret and tight-knit, it felt like they were doing things wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong things, just, wrongdoing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and it's tough to cover a losing program, you know, day in and day out when the fans are, you know, looking to take out their frustration after every loss, and sometimes they get frustrated with the media for not asking the right questions, even though really, you know, we can only ask so many questions in certain situations. So I think everybody was tired of the losing and the negativity and the way the administration previously handled it and kind of shifted the blame towards the media and towards the fans at that time, just kind of left a sour taste in everybody's mouth. And this administration is the complete opposite. So very impressed by John Gilbert. You know, when he was first hired, some people had mentioned that he was similar to Comfort, that he was never out in front and kind of always behind the scenes, but that couldn't be more wrong. John Gilbert is completely different from Jeff Comfort in so many ways, and I think he's the right leader for ECU. He's got great guidance from Dave Hart, and ECU's got some great coaches to turn these programs around and obviously keep baseball rolling. But Pirate fans just need to stay patient, as hard as that is to hear, and continue to give and support this program, because I think it's going to take a major step forward soon.
You know, Stephen, I was just going to make a funny comment or try to. It was funny because we had a outing, a media outlet, and they invited us out there, and I look at Gilbert and I was like, no, he's not. He literally was getting in a truck, and I was like, that's perfect for athletic director at East Carolina. I mean, it seems like he's more like us.
Yeah, he's just a normal dude that you can have an easy conversation with, and that's the best thing about it. Joe Dooley and Cliff Godwin are the same way, and my early impressions of Mike Houston is very similar as well.
What I was going to say, guys, is that just a personal experience, kind of like what you were saying, Dave, as far as John Gilbert, way back toward the beginning of the baseball season, my son and I had gone down for the Sunday game against UCF, and we were taking a look around the Southside Project and just walking there between Ward and Scales. And John Gilbert, he hadn't met me at that point. He turned around and initiated a conversation with me. So that impressed me. He didn't know me from anybody, but he just saw me wearing Pirate stuff. So he came over, introduced himself, and made a little small talk as they were walking to the Murphy Center, he and Ryan Robinson and J.K. McClellan.
I want to ask you, Stephen, let's shift gears because we respect your time. All three of us have places to be in a handful of minutes. So let's talk last night. First of all, I want to congratulations to the Pirates, one of my favorite plays of all time. My uncle used to run that when he was a manager of the San Francisco Giants, and with that safety squeeze. And want to talk about that. And also, first, before we mention that, can you give us the status of Lane Hoover? I didn't hear how – is he okay?
Cliff Galvin said he's day-to-day after the game, but I've heard the early returns are not good. I haven't confirmed what his official status is. But he came off the field holding his – clavicle, collarbone area, and basically I was down the dugout, was taking photos, and the trainer was just like, he can't play anymore. So I think they're going to do some follow-up x-rays and stuff, but the initial return, he might miss some time, and obviously that would be a blow if that's what the case is, because he's been huge in that two-hole and outfield spot.
Yeah, it really has, and I meant suicide squeeze. What a great way to win for the Pirates, kind of payback after what Campbell had done early in the year with that walk-off. We kind of did the same thing to them in essence. And you know, this is huge, getting 40 wins. And now we have, with Memphis coming to town, you really would like to get a sweep if you possibly can to end on a strong note.
Yeah, you know, the suicide squeeze is always such an exciting play, and I think it's really indefensible if a team does not pitch out or really make a bad pitch in the dirt. If you're sending a runner at full speed, which Christian Jaylen's coming from third base at full speed, and the bunt is down, you know, he was crossing home before the guy at first even picked up the ball. So,
wow.
It's an indefensible play, unless the other team basically guesses right, which they did not, even though they brought in five infielders. So they were playing for the double play. ECU laid down the squeeze. Great job by Brady Lloyd to execute it. And, you know, just another crucial midweek win. And the biggest thing for me is it continues to show this team will fight through a bunch of adversity. You know, you didn't have Burleson. You didn't have Packard. Brady Lloyd was playing center field for the first time since his sophomore season, I believe. Nick Barber was in center field at the end of the game, which I'd never seen before. Ryder Giles went from third to pitching, and you had Connor Norby in at second base. It was just kind of a crazy last few innings, and for ECU to come out on top against a very good Campbell team really speaks volumes to kind of this team's toughness and all that stuff. As cliche as it sounds, it's very easy to lose that game when you're without some of your star players. But they did not. They get that to the 40-win barometer. You know, it takes some pressure on them, off them, heading into the weekend. Really, they just need to win two or three. Obviously, if they sweep, looks even better. But now going for the conference record for wins to surpass Louisville's 19 from a couple of years ago.
With these injuries forcing some lineup changes, it's funny, just a few days ago, I guess it was on Sunday during that game against Wichita State, Chandler Jenkins was at the plate, and my dad, I was watching the game with him, and he said, don't be surprised if Chandler Jenkins plays a bigger role than people expect down the stretch, and then he has the game that he had last night. He and Bryson Worrell really stepped up.
Yeah, that was – I tell you what, man, it was kind of like their starter, Westlake for Campbell, you know, another left-hander, quality stuff, was giving EC some fits, as we've seen with quality left-handers, and Jenkins had a great approach, sat on the first pitch, break the ball, and, you know, really hit a no-doubt home run to right field. So, very happy for Chandler because great kid. You know, I've interviewed him a couple times since he's been here. Very hard working, has been a great teammate this year. If you watch, when he takes a field, no matter the score, inning, he is all out sprinting on and off the field. And, you know, that just shows to me that he's a guy who's going to be always giving 100% effort. You know, maybe he doesn't have the greatest bat or the greatest tools on the team, but he deserves some good play, and I think he finally got that last night. And it looks like he and Dusty Baker and, you know, Worrell might get some more opportunities here down the stretch if Hoover's out for an extended period of time. And the Pirates are going to need those guys to step up. So hopefully Chandler having that success last night kind of gives him some confidence going into the very latter portion and postseason of the season.
No doubt about it. Those guys really, really showed the depth of this roster. And I'm kind of shifting gears to basketball. I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but obviously a major roster overhaul is taking place, and we have 10 already on the ship, and then likely more to follow. And guys like Javon Franklin and Charles Coleman. Coleman was a previous Wake Forest commit, recently decommitted. And then also you have Javon Franklin that I mentioned. He seems to be down between the Pirates and West Virginia. I know I read on Hoist the Colors earlier this morning.
Yeah, Javon Franklin I think is really ECU's top target right now. You're talking about a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", and is a tremendous post presence at that size. He's an outstanding leaper, would be probably the best athlete on the team. I think Seth LaVey, but probably even better as far as jumping ability and rebounding and blocking shots and all that sort of stuff. Duncan, he's a phenomenal athlete, and he would have 3 years of eligibility remaining. I think it's down to him in West Virginia. Memphis and Ole Miss were in there, but they've kind of filled up with some of their additions, you know, including Kadeem Sy. But, you know, Coleman's he's a name to watch for sure. We've been on this thing for a long time. ECU has been recruiting forever. The one thing that worries me is if he doesn't make a commitment soon, and he's out there seeing what else is out there, which I've just seen Georgia has offered him a scholarship. If I'm ECU, I'm just moving on. He's already burned you once. You thought he was coming to ECU earlier in the recruiting process. He went to Wake Forest. So if he continues to string you out, to me, I'll just move on and look for another transfer or something as far as a true big man. Because you don't want to waste more time on Coleman after already spending a lot of time there. But he's a very good player. If he shows legitimate interest and wants to come visit or you know, wants to commit, then you definitely take him.
What about as far as football is concerned? I know that Feaster from Clemson, the grad transfer, is there any hope there with him? I know we're deep at running back, but anytime you have a talent like him, you got to take him.
Tavian Feaster, man, the last I saw, he's getting interest from South Carolina, Alabama. I mean, the schools after him are legit. So unless he just really wants to play right away and be a number one guy, I think UCU's got some uphill battle to climb there. They have reached out. They have showed interest, but I don't know how realistic it is. He's a former five-star, number one running back in the country recruit. And the biggest difference between him and, you know, some of these other guys we've seen in the past, like a Tyshawn Dyes, Feaster was actually an integral part of Clemson's success last season. So he's proven he can do it. So I do think UC is going to add a grad transfer running back or a grad transfer skill position player somewhere. They need some speed. They need some game-breaking ability. I don't know if Feaster will be the guy or not, but they are definitely looking into some names there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm looking forward to it. Steven, I know you got to run. How can folks get in contact with you as far as social media? And obviously we want them to be like us and join hoistthecolors.net.
Yeah, come to hoistthecolors.net. Even though it is mid-May, and a lot of people think it's a slower time of year, we're pumping out content daily. Like Bubba mentioned, we had the recruiting war room earlier today where we dropped a lot of info. We're doing that weekly now. We got the VIP chat. We got a lot of stuff going on. It's just always an exciting time for ECU fans, and I think a lot of momentum, like we talked about earlier. So we're going to have a lot to report this offseason. Go to hoistthecolors.net. You can try your first month now for $1 and also get 30% off an annual subscription. So we're running that special for a while. So check us out, hoistthecolors.net, for the latest info on ECU.
All right, buddy, I know you got to run. We'll have to get back in a few weeks whenever we know more about basketball recruiting. We'll have you back and talk more baseball and football as well. Thank you so much for being on the Sports Objective.
No doubt, guys. Y'all have a good one. Thanks for having me.
I go. He's very busy. Was kind enough to, with a busy day like Wednesday and all that, Bubba, he was kind enough to talk to us, right?
Yeah, always enjoy catching up with Steven. He obviously covers it for a living and does a tremendous job. And so anytime we have the opportunity to talk Pirate Athletics with Steven Igo from voiceofcolors.net, we enjoy it and have a good time.
Well, and by the way, I want to remind folks, again, lots of stuff going on. Bubba, we need to plug, too. We've got lots of stuff coming up this year, and one of the things we want to mention is our watch party we're going to have up this summer. I wanted to we're going to get former players for watching games on YouTube. We already have some lined up. We're not going to talk. It's kind of like R&D, but I want to give a sneak peek of that, right? That's coming up in this summer, most likely July.
Yeah, some of the top games the Pirates have had down through the years. For instance, the 1999 game against Miami in Raleigh, as you like to call it, the Floyd Bowl. But also you have several games from that year. That season opener against West Virginia in Charlotte was a very memorable one where David Garrard had a huge day. Keith Stokes emerged onto the scene. And the Pirate rushing attack that day ran for something like 300 yards against the Mountaineers. But then we'll take a look at games like the 95 Liberty Bowl, the 96 game where we defeated Miami when they were ranked 12th down in the Orange Bowl under Butch Davis. So many games to take a look at.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and I know that we've got a lot of other stuff. But we'll actually save the date, folks, July the 27th. We've got another event coming up, a live podcast event. We've also got a big announcement we're going to make this summer regarding the podcast. So I'll just say that right, Bubba. It's something I think people are going to be very excited about. We'll wait in the next month or so before we make the announcement.
Yeah, there's always so much anticipation going into East Carolina football season, particularly this year with the regime change transitioning to Mike Houston. That anticipation and excitement is going to be greater than what it's been in several years. So really looking forward to that. And I know Pirate Nation will be starving for their football content and passing the days until August 31st in that season opener at Carter-Finley Stadium against NC State.
By the way, folks, if you didn't see it, there was a on Facebook, I think it was the EC football group that they had, where apparently NC State has a clock where to beat East Carolina, and they have how many hours, minutes, seconds, one of those countdown clocks. So they can pretend like it's not a big game, but if East Carolina was somehow can go in there and beat the man who supposedly broke off our finger, then that would be a huge start to the season. And those coaches that were at James Madison last year let that game slip away. One in particular told me that was pretty much a quote from him, and they want that game bad. I'll just go ahead and record say they want the NC State game bad, because they had it. They had NC State, as talented as that NC State team was last year, they had them on the ropes and was leading in the fourth quarter and just let that game slip away. So we'll have to wait and see, obviously, how that turns out. But again, folks, for tickets for ECU, for any kind of the tickets, go to ecupirates.com. There's some baseball tickets for the postseason, the regionals and super regionals like we were talking about. And, Bubba, I want to see a whole bunch of people in Dowdy-Ficklin for that huge, even though it doesn't matter the opponents this year. Let's go out and support Mike Houston. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, obviously the season opener, the home opener is against Gardner-Webb. That's really not this staff or this regime's doing as far as who the opponent is, but the main thing is the Pirates are playing. And I really think that it worked out well with it being Mike Houston's first home game, because I think that game will be much more well attended, especially if we're able to be competitive or hopefully even win that game at NC State in the season opener, that you'll really see a nice crowd for Gardner-Webb compared to what you would have under other circumstances.
I think we get, at least, even though it's Labor Day, not Labor Day weekend, but the first game, and it's not a big name, I still think we get 35,000. I'm going to stick with that. As a solid bet, we'll see. Hopefully,
I fully expect that. I'll say right now, I think that we'll top 40 for that Gardner-Webb game. I really hope so.
I think there's a lot of excitement, and Mike Houston's doing all the right things to build the program, and we'll certainly see how that goes. You know, Bubba, we wanted to talk about here a little bit on the show, and obviously, when we get closer to time. By the way, folks, we're planning to do something special for Selection Monday, Memorial Day. So stay with us about that for college baseball. But I want to touch on D1 baseball, Bubba. I saw today, and I emailed you and Kyle about they're looking like, again, Greenville once again, even though we've won all the games that we've won, and 40 now to be exact. I saw the article again today from D1 baseball having us still on the 9 line, the 9th seed overall out of the 16 regionals hosting in Greenville, obviously, and they still have us 1, NC State 2, Illinois, what was the Illinois school, 3?
Illinois State.
Illinois State, that's right. And then 4 is Campbell, so they still have that pretty solid. I think the bad thing, I'll just say this about it, and then I'll let you obviously comment. I'm upset about it because I think Campbell's a very dangerous 4 seed, as we saw last night. I think NC State, I understand why you would do that, because they're not on the schedule and they're a 2 seed. I don't know anything about Illinois State at a 3 seed, but obviously they're good enough to win the tournament. And I understand teams are good when they get to this level when you come to postseason. But if that holds true, then Ray Tanner obviously has something against East Carolina. That's the way I feel.
Overall, I mean, yeah, you expect the regional to reflect the seeding that you've earned, and I think overall that it would pretty much do that. We look forward to having Coach Gary Overton on. Coach O is, of course, served as the head of the committee for some time, one of those years. So we really look forward to hearing from him a little bit more in detail. But I know they try to balance things out. So taking a look at the Lubbock Regional, and Texas Tech is, of course, the number 8 national seed. And
right.
Then in there you have a common opponent, or not a common opponent, but someone the Pirates played earlier this year, and number 3 seed Duke, and that
right.
They are projected to be taking on the Cal Bears as a 2 seed. And then Texas Tech is projected to play New Mexico State, which is a team that can really swing the bats. So also that's something that is of note. You could have a East Carolina Duke super regional.
Yeah,
should they come out of there?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, last year, Bubba, Duke's back was against the wall. They go down to Athens, and they win the whole thing for the regional. Then they go to Lubbock like we did in 2016, and they put Texas Tech, held them down to the wire, and unfortunately didn't make it to Omaha. But Chris Pollard's done an excellent job. And then this year, they're not having the year quite like they had last year, but they look like now projected as a number three seed there in Lubbock. So they would be, instead of the super regional in Lubbock, they would be in the regional in Lubbock. So I thought that was really interesting that they had them back there in the regional versus the super regional.
Yeah, that was something that, of course, jumped out. And like you said, Duke having been there last year and been very close to knocking the door down and getting to Omaha as the Pirates did back in 2016 when they were in the Lubbock Super Regional and also ended up in a three-game situation. But there, after winning game one, of course, that ball came off Brady Lloyd's bat and it hit the back of the mound and kicked a little bit towards second base, enough where their second baseman was able to make the play to keep the game going. And, of course, the Red Raiders eventually won the ball game and then blew us out on Sunday in game three. But yeah, that was interesting. And some other notes regarding the American in these projections. They think the American will get three teams in as things stand right now. And those other two teams are UConn and then Houston. They're projected to be three seeds. Houston is projected to be sent to Stillwater, and then UConn is projected to be the three seed down in Coral Gables at University of Miami.
It'll be interesting to see. And again, folks, we're going to touch right there. And again, we're going to have Bubba. We're going to have a very special show. I know. Definitely on Memorial Day, and we'll just say leave it at that right now for the selection Monday, and we'll have all kinds of great guests, and Bubba, I know, has been working hard on that, and appreciate you, dude, for all that you do behind the scenes, and he and I, and Bubba and Kyle and I collaborate, obviously, and on different things, and so we let him take the lead, obviously, as the booker, so...
No, I was going to say, absolutely. I love college baseball, and not only will we catch up with Coach O, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, but we'll also talk to Stu Murray from On Campus to the Cape podcast. He's planning on attending the Greenville Regional, and really like Stu, very knowledgeable about the college game, and maybe we'll have another visit with Mike Rooney or Kyle Peterson, you never know. And we'll also be catching up with a lot of former Pirate players, particularly those who have been on the four super regional teams, but then also some others from different eras, even dating back to the 1960s. So you don't want to miss that.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll see if we can get out to – I assume they're going to have it at Mellow Mushroom, like we talked about before, Bubba, like in the past viewing party.
That is actually still to be determined. I heard an interview on, I guess it was Monday, J.J. McClam was on, I think it was PRL on Pirate Radio, and J.J. said that is still being determined. So, but yeah, I would not be surprised if the venue is again Mellow Mushroom, because that's where it's been in recent years.
It'll be most likely standing room only. Maybe I can at least be sitting outside on the patio, and of course, hopefully it won't be too high. But we'll wait and see how that goes. I want to touch on. I know that today, being Wednesday, another From the Helm came out. You told me about that and had a chance to briefly look over it. That being From the Helm, another great letter from, once again, John Gilbert. My parents always said, talking about the little things, you know, things that may add up, or doing the little, meaning when they say the little things, just doing the little things. Well, John Gilbert is doing the little things, and, you know, when we talk to people all the time. There's people that, you know, whether it's been a basketball game, for example, there was numerous times in my seats that were close to yours, Bubba, where it wasn't, you know, major donors. It was just average fans. And he took the time to talk to every single person that he came. If he was anywhere close to a person, I can guarantee you he at least spoke to them and acknowledged them, where we never had that in the previous administration. So I have to give kudos to John Gilbert I don't get paid by John Gilbert or anybody else at ECU. I'm just being straight from the heart of how I was really impressed with how he was out there and how he mingled with people, because we heard people say that he was it wasn't he was a bad person, but maybe he was shy, a little reserved. But I haven't, I've never experienced that with him at all.
Right. So we're just simply, as you said, sharing our experiences. And as we shared some that were not so positive with the previous administration, we're sharing what we've experienced. And I've not heard anyone say that they've experienced anything negative with this new regime. And you're not going to please everybody. That's just unrealistic. But it's evident that this group gets it, whether it's John Gilbert, Ryan Robinson, or on down the line with some of the other new administration. But I'm kind of taking a look at the letter from the Helm that you referenced. And he started things off talking about the academic success. Of course, you always expect a lot of the Olympic sports perform well in the classroom,
right?
And that was the case again. Women's golf under the leadership of Kevin Williams, they led the way with a 3.77 team GPA. You had men's tennis that was next with 3.59. You had women's cross country 3.58, and then also women's tennis that was above a 3.5. Baseball team, of course, always performed so well in the classroom under Coach Godwin, and they were well over a 3.4 once again. The football team, as we've already mentioned, they had their highest GPA, and Coach Dooley, one that we hadn't talked about yet, had well over a 3.0, actually closer to a 3.15, which is very impressive, because that's one that's really lagged behind in the past and caused us some issues.
By the way, are you done talking about GPA, or if not, I had one thing I mentioned.
Yeah, that was everything I had on that, but I go ahead with what you had to say, and then we'll talk some other aspects of From the Helm.
Yeah, I wanted to mention one here that I'm seeing. I think it's a great move. He says, we're excited to announce free admission to all home volleyball and women's soccer games beginning this fall. Our senior leadership spent considerable time analyzing the metrics and feels strongly this decision will have a positive impact on attendance of these home events. We want all supporters to come to campus and support our student athletes. Our hope is free admission will allow more groups to attend home events. I think that's an excellent idea. And, you know, my kids love to, with Stacy and the kids, I know with Riley and Reese, y'all are always looking for events. And these two, and Colin is included in that. He doesn't have kids, but he's middle class like we are. Anytime you can have free events and things that kids can enjoy, activities like that, it's a family-friendly kind of thing. I think that's a great idea because you know, and I know, Bubba, that when you have multiples of four and five that you got to pay for, it can really add up.
Yeah, it most definitely can, and I think that's the right decision. That's something we've talked about multiple times on this podcast is how we thought that would be the right thing to do, and it's good to see that that is going to be done this fall for volleyball and women's soccer. And so anything that we may not be making at the gate, hopefully some of these folks, they'll be – you never know. It may just be someone in the area that's not necessarily an East Carolina fan, and then they become a Pirate fan, so they buy merchandise, hats, shirts, what have you, that they wouldn't have bought otherwise, or they're buying concessions, et cetera. So I definitely think it's the right decision.
It is, and I know that there's other great points you want to make. I guess we could start with increase in Pirate Club membership.
Yeah, and the Pirate Club membership is up 400 donors from where it was this time last year. Do not have the exact total, but 400 more members than where we were in mid-May
right.
of 2018. And then also we've raised $500,000 more than we had at this time last year. And another good sign is not only do we have 400 members more than where we did or than we did in this time last year, we had 1,200 donors who have given more than they gave in 2018. So that's just a sign of them being encouraged with where things are headed.
Another point I want to make, because I know there's some others you want to make, and I'm not going to touch on those. I'll let you do that. He also talks about the facility update. He says, we broke ground on a new turf football practice field last week, replacing a surface that was nearly 15 years old. The new turf should be completed by the end of June. Work will begin soon on the new auxiliary turf field located at the former Hyatt Field parking lot, which will be used by all sports. And I think that's really impressive because this administration gets it about that. In other words, instead of spending, this sounds mean, but I'm going to say it, instead of spending frivolously on desserts and alcohol for big-time donors, why not spend the money carefully and cautiously on improvements of facilities and, you know, the weight, all the weights and all the stuff inside the Murphy Center. While it looks nice compared to other facilities, it's 20 years old, and they've done a nice job of their also working on that, I know, as of a couple weeks now. So kudos to Gilbert, Ryan Robinson, and everybody. J.J. McLam has always done a fantastic job, and you have Tom McClellan, a lot of great people inside that Word building. And we made it very clear last year, those were the people we were fighting for, everybody at the Pirate Club, a lot of people inside the Word building, a lot of great people that were suffering from the previous administration. And we didn't want to loop and put all those people in the same bowl, so to speak. They were definitely a lot of good people. And only a bad thing about it, a few of the top people made it bad for everybody inside the Word building.
Yeah, that's what. And there's certainly been a culture change, as we've discussed. And as far as the facility upgrades, like you're saying, with the new turf field on both the football turf field and then the auxiliary room, which will allow the baseball, softball, women's lacrosse, whoever needs to use it to not wear out the football one, that's very important and something that unfortunately had not been done before now. But and then also, of course, we're going to be getting the new new paint job and lightening Menjie's up, if you will, because because the court in there has been pretty dark in recent years. But so hopefully that will pay dividends with our image projection as well. And then also just wanted to mention as far as social media, that's what ECU Athletics, and that is at ECU Athletics on Twitter, was ranked 12th among college athletics accounts for their highest interaction rate.
I tell you what, that's another thing. I'm glad you said that. I've been meaning to say that for the last few weeks or more, how great all the content, including the 60 seconds with John Gilbert and all that stuff. Maybe some people see it as corny. I don't. I think it's great, and it's obviously it helps those of us that are huge fans, donors, alums, whatever, people that may not even like you. See, it helps people stay in touch with the program, and you feel like there's a sense of ownership now where you can actually enjoy and be connected again with the program versus the only people that were connected before are the people that want to be big money or the people that really had big money. So I'm glad to see that's I think that's very fair considering all that they've done. And I would have them number one, but, you know, 12, we'll take 12 considering how many universities there are in athletics across the country.
Yeah, that's what I really enjoyed, the 60 seconds with the AD that you referenced, and because that's something that allows you to get to know our athletes a bit as far as some of their interests and things that are a little bit more on a personal level, so you don't just see what they do when they're on the court or field, in the pool, what have you. So I think that's good, and it also lets you know that John Gilbert is certainly willing to do what he needs to do to engage the fan base.
No doubt. Is there other stuff from the helm, or did you want to move on? I know it's on ecupirates.com where people can see it.
Yeah, so go to ecupirates.com if you haven't seen From the Helm. We touched on a lot of the highlights, but there is more there that we did not discuss.
One of mine folks, too, saw where the people were actually the Pirate Armada for Pitt County. This is Saturday before the game, 11 o'clock start time, Johnson Stadium, right there, the soccer stadium, where there's always the tailgates for the athletic, I should say, the Alumni Association. They're going to have the Armada 11 o'clock on Saturday, 2 hours before game time, against the Memphis Tigers, the very last baseball game of the regular season this year for Clark LeClair. So the tickets are only $20, and you can also, kids 12 and under are free. So a great thing. It's all the fixings, like the tailgate they would have, it's only $20. You get Coach Houston, Dooley and the like, and other folks will be there, John Gilbert. So if you haven't had a chance to get any of them, Armada Saturday is a great chance right before Alyssa Pack, Clark LeClaire. As Coach Godwin said about Campbell last night, it was a regional-like atmosphere. So let's have a regional atmosphere all weekend long, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for Memphis.
Yeah, that's what hopefully the Pirates will close out and the season on a strong note. Haven't lost a conference series yet, and I certainly don't expect that to start this weekend. I think the Pirates will definitely win the series quite probably sweep, even though that's obviously always hard to do, whether it's home or away. But something else of note about that Saturday game is it's Fan Appreciation Day, so you can not only, I think you can run the bases, but you can also get autographs from the players after the game. And then something else, $4 general admission tickets. So that's something that's obviously nice.
No doubt about it. It'll be a great weekend, and certainly want to make sure people come out and support the Pirates. Before we go, though, we obviously want to tell folks how can they find us on social media, Bubba, and how can they reach out to us as far as reaching out to the show.
If you'd like to shoot us an email regarding a potential topic or a guest, you can do so at thesportsobj@gmail.com. You can tweet us at thesportsobj. You can follow us on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Or you can, of course, like and follow us on Facebook. And we're also on YouTube. Our YouTube channel has some excellent videos, different athletic facilities, whether it's ECU-related or non-ECU-related, like minor league ballparks. If you race fans, we have a video of Dale Earnhardt Park. And he's, of course, from Kannapolis, North Carolina. So we have a park. A video of that park, being that I only live about 5 miles from there.
Yeah.
But I know, obviously, a lot of race fans, and so I thought that was something that they may enjoy seeing had they not had the opportunity to get to Kannapolis. But yeah, those are the ways people can follow us. And wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review and make sure you let us know and let other people know how much you enjoy listening to the show.
Yeah, that's right. Good luck to the Pirates against Memphis, as that's going to be a huge series. Thank you to our great guests, right? We had Coach Schoenrock and, of course, Steven Igo. Appreciate them very much. We miss Kyle, but certainly understand that he's on assignment at work right now, so we had to do the show when we could do the show. But good luck to the Pirates. And again, folks, if you want season tickets for football or those baseball postseason tickets for the regional and potentially the super regional, just dial 1-800-ECU or ecupirates.com. All right, for our great guest, Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.